Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now tuned to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I have three people up in the Air City right now, and they're talking about a whole bunch of different groups that they sang with and recorded with, and we'll be getting sort of a picture of some of the groups and what Chicago looked like in the music scene in the late 70s through the 80s, so it should be interesting. So first of all, thanks so much for coming down, and if you could all introduce yourselves.
I'm Byron Woods. How you doing, Bob?
Mae Cohen, hello.
Regina Walton, how you doing?
Okay, and you all recorded in a lot of groups, but I guess the main groups you recorded in that actually, the main groups you sang in that recorded were Sweet Music, Reality, and On Stage. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we have three sort of different stories, and they all intersect at different points. So I think first I'm going to talk to Regina about the music she sang with. Is that okay?
That's cool.
Okay, so first of all, can you talk about what part of Chicago are you from?
I'm from the South Side, SOUPH, South Side. You know, we never did the TH thing.
Were you born?
Southeast, actually.
Were you born in Chicago?
I was.
And how did you get started with music?
Well, you know, my mother used to have these parties, and she'd wake me up in the middle of the night and make me sing Aretha Franklin's Running Out of Fools. So, and I was a little...
How old were you?
9, 10, like that.
Okay.
And it just kind of stuck with me.
And so what specific area of the South Side are you from? What streets?
Wow. Southeast, actually. Ridgeland, Cornell. You know, we were nomadic, so we lived on a lot of streets.
Okay. So you originally got started singing at your mom's parties, you're saying?
Yeah, I did.
And then when did you get started singing with groups?
In high school.
What high school did you go to?
I went to South Shore.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what years did you attend school?
I went there from 1965 through 1969.
And did you have a group in school?
We did. We were first the Lonettes, then we were the Charlottes.
And how did you get started singing, and what inspired you to form a group?
Well, at the time, Supremes, Marvelettes, you know, and all of us in school thought we could hold a note.
Okay.
And Barbara Peace and I went to grammar school and high school together. So we gravitated to each other in high school and started singing. It was just the two of us. And then another young lady who graduated from grammar school with us, Pat McAlpin, she started singing with us. So that made the Lonettes. Then we added two other people. Then we became the Charlottes and like that.
So the Charlottes were five girls?
Yes.
So you had a bigger harmony than like the Supremes or the Marvelettes.
Oh, absolutely.
And were there, I haven't talked to a lot of people from the Southeast, were there a lot of groups from that area?
You know, I really don't know. I knew of two other groups in high school, but I can't.
Did they record?
Remember. No.
So you were called the Charlottes, spelled with an S-H? Or?
Oh,
C-H-R.
C-H-A-R, pardon me, yes.
Okay. And then, so you did, what kind of stuff did you do with the Charlottes?
Oh, we did Martha and the Vandellas, Marvelettes, very little Supremes. But we did do an arrangement of It Was a Very Good Year.
Okay.
And that was, it was a cappella, and it was real intense for singing groups at that time. We didn't do 1-3-5 harmony.
And when you were singing, did you sing in just talent shows? What types of shows did you do?
Talent shows, special proms, you know, little Valentine's Day parties, stuff like that.
So were you the stars of your school?
Okay. yes and no.
Okay. But you were one of the few groups singing in your school, so you must have been popular as a singing group that was in your school. So then did your group continue when you graduated?
It did. We Pat, Barbara, and I, and Cheryl Lewis, went to Loop College.
Okay.
Which is, and we all majored in Bidwis and cafeteria, and so that's where we would sing, and we did talent shows there. We united with a male group that I cannot remember the name of it, but they would sing, we would sing. So whatever little shows they had at Loop, we would do those. We're talking 1969, 70.
And you were still called the Charlottes?
I think we were.
And what was the lineup at that point?
At that point, it was myself, Barbara Peace, Pat McAlpin, and Cheryl Lewis.
It's McAlpin, it's M-C...
A-L-P-I-N.
Okay, so then there were four girls in
yes.
the group, and you were in college and just kind of singing, and did you sing, was it still like talent shows, or did you start performing in clubs too?
We didn't start performing in clubs right away.
Okay.
That, McAlpin left the group, I think, 70, 71, something like that. And then we all left Loop because we couldn't major in Bidwest and Cafeteria anymore to kick
okay.
us out. And we started singing in the clubs then.
So you started trying to do it professionally?
Yes.
Were you working and then performing in clubs at night? Did you have day jobs? Were you actually working music full time?
We were doing music full time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are some of the clubs you performed at?
Ooh, baby. The Green Bunny. The High Chaparral, Beale Street, Guys and Gals, Bonanza. The Bonanza was funny because they used to have a stripper open for us. Nobody listened to us after the stripper. So we got it reversed where we would open for the stripper, and then people paid attention until they saw the stripper, and then they didn't know we were there. Places like that. That's Life was a big one for us.
And did you perform every night of the week, pretty much?
Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
And so you were doing music full time at that point.
Oh yeah.
Were you still called the Charlottes?
I don't know what we were called at that point. You know what? At that point, we were called Love Unlimited.
Okay, so who came up with that name?
I did.
Okay, and did you have a band too, or were you just?
We had a band, and in the band, we had a drummer named James White, Uncle Barry White. And
so you're saying he was Barry's nephew?
He was Barry's nephew, absolutely. And so we had finished the rehearsal and we were listening to the radio, and then this lovely song comes on, Walking in the Rain with the One I Love. We were like, ooh, that is so pretty, we should sing that. And then the DJ on-air personality says, and that's Love Unlimited. Mm-hmm. And we were like, that's not us. So we call around now, we try to find a record. I actually called Richard Pegee, and he told me what label it was on, and then we called Detroit or wherever, and then we called the Library of Congress in Washington, and they said if we had not recorded first with the name, then we couldn't use it anymore.
So what happened? Did you call out James White on it? What happened?
We were so done, and people were calling saying, you know, you guys' record really sounds good. And we said, okay. Mm-hmm. And then we did some gigs as Love Unlimited. They paid us more as Love Unlimited. That was back in the day, though. We had to have some type of reciprocity, you know. So we did some shows and closed with that song, and... Yeah.
So did you ever find out the story of how Barry found out the name?
No, did not. Well, his nephew was so excited. He was a young guy. He was like 15.
Okay.
So he probably go, look, Uncle, I'm playing with a group, Love Unlimited. And the uncle was like, ooh, that's a nice name. Have they done a record? And, well, I don't want to talk about
okay.
dead people, but rough.
But did the drummer stay with you after that?
No, because at that time you kind of changed.
He was really young, too.
Yeah, and you change musicians like you change shoes. You know, they come and they go.
So how long was the group called Love Unlimited?
Until we found out that we really had no way to keep our name.
So was it like 2 years, something like that?
After we found out about the record?
No, like were you Love Unlimited from like 71 to 73?
We were Love Unlimited from 71 until those girls came out with that record and we performed using that name and got paid.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you change your
that
name?
Bad thing?
Yeah.
Did you change your name after that?
Yes, we did.
And what was the new name of the group?
The new name of the group was Sweet Music, with a K.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And who came up with that name?
I did.
Okay. And who sang lead on? So first of all, did on your record, obviously one person sings lead, but when you sang together, did you have different parts, or did you switch the parts? Who sang each part?
When we would perform, you know, we had signature songs that we would do.
Okay.
So there was no lead singer per se, and we worked real hard really, really hard to not fall into that, to that groove, where just because I sang the lead on the record, I did not want to be looked at as the lead singer. So we always had a repertoire that embraced everybody's lead vocal ability.
So what are some of the signature songs you had at your shows?
Ooh, Sophisticated Lady. Why did we sing that? Sophisticated Lady. We did a lot of Steely Dan. Chaka Khan. Please Pardon Me was one of mine. Yeah.
Okay. And so when you changed your name around 73, 74 to Sweet Music. Mm-hmm. And did you continue the same kind of act, just with a new name?
Well, we sought out management. We went to Purvis Staples.
He was managing the Emotions.
He was managing the Emotions and the Sons of Slum. And we became a part of that company, that stable. And there was another female group, but I can't remember the name of them. Joanne Graham was in that female group. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember the name of that group. And we stayed there for a couple of years. Actually, Clinton Jen and Ronnie Paul took us to Perth. They had seen us performing somewhere. And so we were looking for a manager. We stayed there a couple of years till we found out that he was not going to record us. And had no intentions of recording us.
Okay.
So we left there, which was not, it wasn't hard to leave. It was just like...
So when you were with Perv, did you do shows with the Emotions and Sons of Slum also? Like, since you were part of this?
We did that once, and it was for one of Mavis Staples' birthday parties. And they made me sing, "I'll Take You There," Perv did. And she looked at me like I should pour gasoline on her and set her on fire. Because, you know, I didn't do it really well, and I was real freaked out because she was sitting right there, and I'm trying to sound like Mavis, and I don't sound like a mess.
Okay.
But that was the only show that we were on with the Emotions. We had done several shows with Sons of Slum.
And did you ever tour outside of Chicago?
Yes, but not in that part of...
Okay, later in your career you did. So then you said you left Perv, and what happened after that?
We left Perv, and then we came upon Eddie Thomas. Can't really remember how we ended up being managed by Eddie Thomas, but that's where I Get Lifted came into play.
So what did you go with Eddie around, 75 or 76?
I would say it was early 75.
Okay, and I Get Lifted, it came
out in 76.
So what's the story? How do you end up recording that song?
Well, Eddie said, "I got a song I want you to do. I've got a track I want you to listen to." It was produced by Major Lance. And it was an instrumental cover of George McRae's I Get Lifted. And he said, "Learn the words." We went into the studio, into Paul Serrano's studio. I think I did two takes on the vocal. The backgrounds took just a little bit longer because we had rehearsed it a lot. And then that was that.
Okay. So let me play the record and we can talk some more about the story.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah. I haven't heard it in almost 30 years.
I hope it still sounds good.
But I'm only 30 years old, so yeah.
You recorded when you were born.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. This is Sweet Music. It came out in 1976. This track is I Get Lifted.
Okay, that was just Sweet Music with their track I Get Lifted that came out in 1976 on Wand Records. And if you're just tuning in, I have Regina Walton, member of Sweet Music, and I think the person singing lead on the record, and she is telling the story of her group. Is that right? Do you sing lead on the record?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so who are the other people singing backup on the record?
Barbara P. Stallworth and Deborah Brown.
Okay, so what's the story? You were with Eddie Thomas, and you said that Major Lance just made this instrumental of it. So first of all, was the George McRae version... Your version is kind of a more disco version than George McRae's version. George McRae's version, what did it get played in Chicago?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So you already knew it was a big hit already. So whose idea was it to redo it? It was just Major Lance's idea?
Eddie's.
Okay.
Yeah, Eddie's.
So was it idea to make it more of like a disco sound?
For sure.
So where did you record the record?
At Paul Serrano's studio.
Okay, I think you mentioned that. And so you recorded it in 76?
Yes.
And do you know how it got placed on Wand Records, which is not a Chicago label, obviously?
Well, what I heard was that Wand Scepter was going out of business, and somehow Eddie sold the master to Florence, got the money, and we became one of those one-hit wonders. They did not expect their record to do what it did.
So it hit, even though they didn't think it would hit.
That's right.
So did it get... So, first of all, it got a lot of play in Chicago.
It got a lot of play nationally.
Do you know what cities it was big in?
We tried to track it, and then he sent us on an Air Force tour. But we kind of kept up with Billboard, Record World, and Cashbox. And it was a national record. I can't tell you...
Do you know if it charted R&B or if it got play on the pop stations also?
It crossed over.
Okay.
It did.
So you had this big hit, and so what happened after that? You said you went on a tour?
Yeah, he sent us on an Air Force Base tour, so we went to most of the Air Force Bases in the United States, and we went to Greenland as well.
Okay.
They hated us in Greenland. They did. They wanted us to sing ABBA, and we didn't, and they didn't like that. We were there for 2 weeks.
It must have been exciting to go to Greenland.
Ah, yes. We were there during the time of the Aurora Borealis, so it was wonderful, but they hated us. And they were very glad when we left, and we were very glad when we left, but it was a paycheck. And
so how long was the Air Force tour?
It's about 2.5 months.
So you played all on U.S. bases in other places. So was that the only place overseas you went?
Yes.
What are the other places in the U.S. you went?
Now, I can't recall the actual names of the bases, but I know we went to Albuquerque, New Mexico. We went to Cheyenne, Wyoming. We went to Oklahoma. We went to Colorado Springs, Duluth, Minnesota. We went some other places. I can't recall.
So it was all male crowds pretty much in the audience because it was guys?
Well, they were mostly males when we did the privates or something. Mm-hmm. But we also did the NCO clubs and then the officers clubs. We hated the officers clubs because they were very posh and they did not allow themselves to really appreciate music. They just kind of sat there and looked at us an 8-stick.
So they were just kind of drinking and talking while you were playing.
Yes.
So you came. So that was still in 76. You did.
That was, and then we came back here right at the height of the gay pride movement.
Okay.
And we performed at a place called Man's Country.
Okay.
A gay bathhouse.
That sounds awesome.
That was fabulous. It was so different.
So, and I bet they knew your record too.
They did. Oh, they did. They did.
Were they dancing to your record too?
They were dancing. I had never seen that many men unclothed dancing ever.
So, they had towels? Like
some had towels and some did not have towels. And some were swinging their towels in the air, among other things swinging. It was fun. It was so cool. You had to be there.
I don't even understand how you would do it. Like, was there a stage at the bathhouse?
There was a stage. There was a dance floor. There was a stage. They brought us in the back. They took us out the back.
Okay.
They did take us to a little, their store. I forgot what the store was called, but we bought items. We bought T-shirts, Man's Country T-shirts, and they had walls and walls of, geez, I'm on the radio, stuff. And so we bought
a toys.
Crisco. You know,
okay. So did you start getting more shows after that? Like,
yeah, we went to the warehouse.
Okay.
That was great.
When was that?
About 2 weeks after Man's Country.
Okay. So did you want to try to get another record deal? What was the story?
We wanted to get another record. We figured, we thought that was the, you know, the next order of the system, but that's not where management, who was also producer, who was also booking agent, was at. It was like, okay, we got the one record, I got paid, you guys went on tour, made a little money, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're saying Eddie didn't want to put more records out on you?
Uh-uh, he didn't.
So how long did you stay with him as a manager?
We left before 76 was over.
Okay,
just we left in September.
Because you were disappointed about your experience with the record?
Among other things. Yeah.
Did the group stay together?
The group stayed together, but there were changes after that.
Okay. And I understand May joined your group?
Diane Madison came first.
Okay.
And there was this club back in the 70s, early 70s, on 95th and Bishop called That's Life. I think there's a Church's Chicken there now or something. Mm-hmm. But a lot of local groups sang there, played there. Third Rail, Sweet Music. Diane came from another group, as Deborah Brown came from another group.
Do you remember what groups they were in?
Deborah Brown and Diane were in the Petites. But they were in the Petites at different times.
But that group didn't record, I don't think.
No.
Okay.
But we knew them because we all performed at this club and we all supported each other. So Diane came to Sweet Music first in 77. And May and Ellen came in
78.
Mm-hmm. So it was five of us.
Okay, so you didn't, other members didn't leave, just new people came?
Deborah Ann left.
Okay.
Diane came, so that left Deborah, Diane, and myself. Then May and Ellen came, so it was five of us.
Okay. And you were just a club group performing all the time?
Well, we were kind of, but mm-hmm. not quite a club group. Mm-hmm.
A lot of rehearsing.
We did a lot mm-hmm. of rehearsing. Yes, we did. And we upgraded, if you will, the mm-hmm. style of music we were singing. Mm-hmm. Because May came with this ear, she could hear notes in between notes, you know, so we became more sophisticated in what we were singing and how we were singing it. Diane brought this purity, this voice that sounded like the heavens opened up, this voice. So, and Ellen, you know, it was just phenomenal. And I think this was around the time when we had the great Mayor Jane Byrne.
So she would put on a lot of events that you would sing at?
And we would sing at almost Rally in the mm. Alley, Chicago, what was it called? Chicago Fest?
Chicago Fest.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Happy Men. We just worked.
We worked
a lot.
A lot.
Yeah, that's what, like, the few remaining groups in Chicago in the early 80s talked about doing all the festivals for the mayors
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We worked a lot. We got a lot of coverage, mm-hmm. a lot mm-hmm. of news coverage.
And so was that in the late 70s, early 80s?
Both.
And what types of music would you do at those events?
Again, we had upgraded, so we were singing things like
Kenny Loggins.
Yeah. Wow. Kenny Loggins, Weather Report, Birdland became a signature piece, Manhattan Transfer, mm-hmm. you know.
Because you had a more universal audience.
Mm-hmm. And because we had the voices.
Okay. Okay, well, I want to get, because your story now intersected with May's
yes, it does.
Story, so let's talk to May a little bit about, so are you also from Chicago?
I am. Well, actually, I'm from Chicago by way of Detroit. I was born in Detroit, Michigan, but I spent my whole life in Chicago.
How old were you when you moved to Chicago?
Five.
And what area of Chicago did you move to?
Southside.
did you stay in the same areas? Like, you weren't South Shore, were you?
No, I was over Southwest, like over near Ashland, Palina, over in that area.
How far south?
77. 77 South at that time.
How did you get started singing?
Well, like my mama said, I was singing before I was walking. I was dancing before I was talking. As far back as I can remember, I was singing. I was at maybe 3 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, 3 years old.
And so how did you first get started singing with vocal groups?
Well, I started in grammar school. We had a choir in grammar school. I went to Yale Grammar School. And these girls knew that I could sing, and they wanted to put together a group. And they asked me to be in a group. And I said, sure. And the group was called the Vivacious Vivacities. Said Glenda, the girl that put the group together, Glenda. She came up with that name. I'm like, that's what I don't ask me what it means, but that was the name of the group.
And do you remember? So, and did you stay together through high school?
No, we all went our separate ways after grammar school. It was just a grammar school group, and it was together for like a minute and a half, and that was it.
Were you also inspired by like the Supremes and the Marvelettes, or were there other?
You know what? I was inspired by actually Johnny Mathis. And Lambert Hendrickson Ross.
Okay.
That was my inspiration for groups, Lambert Hendrickson Ross.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I love the Supremes and the Temptations and all those other groups. But my main inspiration was Lambert Hendrickson Ross, the High Lows. And it was another group like the High Lows. I can't remember the name of them now, but groups like that.
So you were inspired by more kind of like sophisticated harmony,
mm-hmm,
like pop,
because
pop
that's
harmony.
Where my, like Regina said, that's where my ear was. So I kind of gravitated toward that.
So, did you form a new group in high school?
Yeah, in high school, here again, I was singing in the choir, and Diane Womack and a couple of other young ladies put a group together, and they invited me to be in a group. It was called the Belgianettes.
Okay.
It was five of us.
There was a Belgianettes that recorded. It wasn't.
Well, at least I wasn't in that group. I don't think it was the same one.
Okay.
Because we kind of, you know, was together. We did a couple of shows around, you know, but we didn't stay together very long.
Diane had told me she sang in a group, but she couldn't remember the name, so that probably was the group.
That might have been it, because they were upper grade. You know, I was a lower classman, and they were like juniors and seniors, and I was like a lower classman, so I was like, wow, they want me to sing with them, and they upper classmen. You know, most of them were seniors. I was like, cool.
What high school was it?
Calumet High School.
Okay, and what year did that, where did you join that group?
I was probably saying 73.
Okay.
Wait, 69, because I went into grammar school. I mean, high school in 68, so 69.
And there were other groups at Calumet.
I graduated in 72.
Brighter
Side of Darkness was from there. Yeah, that's right.
And Ronaldo Domino came out of there, didn't he?
That's right, yeah. Right.
So were you kind of competing with some of the other groups in your school?
Well, with the Belgianettes, no, but there was another group that I got in after that, and we did quite well in high school. It was Larry Gaines and the Twilights.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just...
We had a male singer, and it was three, you know, the three ladies that background him.
And did you just do talent shows and stuff like that?
We did talent shows. Mm-hmm.
And you had told me you had a band. There was a band called, like, The Family...
The Family Soul. Herb Walker was in that band.
Mm-hmm. Because they cut a record, too.
Yeah, and Jimmy... I think his name was Jimmy Pickett. He played the keyboards. And that was, like, my... I looked up to those guys. I really loved those guys.
Barbara and I sang on that.
Oh, wow. See how it's all connecting?
You sang on
We sang on The Family Soul. There's a Party in the Heavens.
I don't know that record.
Yeah.
They had a funk record called Psych or something like that.
Yeah, Psych. Yeah, I remember that.
Wow.
I wanted to be in that group, but they wouldn't let no girls in. I used to go to all the rehearsals, but they wouldn't let no girls in at the time.
So they were like a band that played behind other groups in your school?
They basically did their own thing, and they were real popular.
Okay.
You know, they were like stars, you know, in the school, and they were upperclassmen, too.
So, the group you were in, it was called Larry...
Larry Gaines and the Twilights.
So the Belgianettes just broke up?
Yeah, we never did any shows or anything. It was, you know, five females, and it was just, you know, it was just for a moment.
Okay.
Just like the Vivacious Vivacities, it was just for a moment.
And you mainly just did talent shows in your school and played at your school, stuff like that?
Yeah. And we did some local stuff with Larry Gaines and the Twilights, but it was just like little community stuff. It wasn't anything major.
And did the group stay together when you graduated?
Nope. Here again, everybody went their separate ways.
Okay.
Barry Gaines left the last when we were all singers, because there was one girl in the group, she was a year ahead of us. So he left like when, because me and Linda, we were juniors, and Charlotte was a senior, and Larry Gaines, I think he was a senior too, and he left school. You know, we don't know what happened to him.
Okay.
He just left. You know, and then we started singing with this other girl named Pam. We did that song, The Touch of You, Baby, Baby, mm-hmm. Touch of You.
Brenda the Tabulation
yeah,
song.
Yeah, we did that. That was like the star song for us. So we tried to keep it going, but and then we just called it The Twilights, but that didn't last very long either.
So you graduated. Did you continue to sing after you graduated?
Yeah, I joined Operation Breadbasket. It was called Breadbasket at the time.
Okay.
Push, and that's how I met all of the singers who were some point become reality. We all sung in that choir together.
Okay, so so
community choir.
Where was the like? Was Jesse Jackson involved with
yes,
that at that time?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Where were they based?
At that time, the Capitol Theater on 79th Street, 79th and Halsted.
Can you talk about like what it was and what was going on with it?
Well, you know, we had meetings every Saturday. My aunts used to go all the time, and they would encourage me to go and join the choir, because at that time the choir was very popular and it was kicking. Billy Jones was the director, and they had another guy, Freddie, and Bob, I think the other guy was Bill or Bob, I can't remember. But there were a lot of great singers. Sue Conway was in that choir. Brenda Lee Eager was in that choir.
Okay.
Lois Scott was in that choir. You know, there was a lot of, you know, successful singers, and you know, they were a little older than us, and we all looked up to them, and so it was just a great situation. The Ascensions, they were in that choir.
Did the choir perform just at your meetings, or did you play around Chicago?
No, we played around, and we did a little traveling, you know, like we went to Memphis and, you know, different places, you know, when they would like do different marches, we would travel, you know. I was so just you know, starstruck and just happy to be there. You know, I can't tell you all the details of everything, because I was just happy to be there and singing with such a great group of people.
And it must have been exciting to be part of, like, the civil rights
stuff. It was
stuff.
Very exciting. It was very exciting.
So were you doing music full-time, or were you just kind of traveling around with the group?
Or at that time, yes, I was doing music full-time.
Did the choir get paid to do shows? Or?
No, but they paid all our expenses and everything like that. I think we had to pay, like, a fee or something, but it wasn't much.
Okay.
We were just happy to be there and happy to be together, you know, and we were part of the cause, you know, that whole thing, you know. So
what years were you with the choir?
I'm not good with years.
Like
but
seven,
I would say maybe, let's see, I graduated high school in 72. So I say 73 until maybe about 76 maybe, 75, something like that.
And you said the members of the group Reality were mainly
everybody
in that choir.
Everybody was in that choir, yeah.
So how did Reality form?
Well, John Harper and Homer Steele, Kay Reed, and this girl Billy, they were in another group together.
Do you remember their group?
I don't remember the name of the group, but I just remember the members of the group.
Did they record it at all?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But at some point, they broke up, you know, and they did shows here and there, you know, just around in the city, you know. So eventually, John, myself, Hank Hicks, it was basically, in the beginning, it was John, myself, Hank Hicks, and Jackie McCullough. Ricky Linton was also a member, but he was very hesitant at first to join the group because he wanted a solo group. He was in the family group, the Lintons.
Okay, mm-hmm. In which they recorded a bunch
mm-hmm.
of records.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So so then the group formed in what year, like 75, 76?
I would say maybe 74, 75, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And who came up with the name Reality?
Probably John. I don't remember me coming up with it, so. Because he was like, basically, him and Hank was like the name, too. I would say probably John came up with it, John Harper.
And then the group, how long were you together before you recorded?
I think we recorded in 75, 76, somewhere in there. I'm not real good with dates, so I'm really wrong.
So were you together for about a year before that? Or
yeah, I would say so. And we rehearsed a lot. I mean, we were very, very disciplined in rehearsing. We rehearsed every week.
And did you do shows also? Or was it just mainly you were rehearsing, getting ready?
Rehearsing, getting ready at first.
And then you ended up recording a record, which was a version of I Want to Be Where You Are.
Mm-hmm.
Which, let me play the record, because we've been talking for a while, and then okay. we can talk about how it came about.
Sure.
So this is Reality with their record. I think this came out in 76
mm-hmm.
on Buddha Records. This is called I Want to Be Where You Are.
But it's not my thing trying to get back.
It's not my thing trying to get back.
So time let me tell you where I'm at. You don't have to worry, cause I'm coming back to where I should have always stayed. And I will love you better than I used to, and give you all the love I have inside. Who could it be I've stayed away too long?
Could it be I've stayed away too long?
Or did I leave your mind when I was gone? But it's not nothing trying to get back. No, no.
Okay, that was just Reality with their version of I Want to Be Where You Are, which was our only record that was released in 1976. And if you're just tuning in, I have May Cohn, who was a member of Reality, who sings on that record, telling her story. So who what's the lineup on that record? First of all, who sings lead?
Ricky Linton is singing lead.
Okay.
And in the group at the time, it was Jackie McCullough, myself, John Harper, and Hank Hicks.
Okay. So, and how did you end up getting a record?
Dwight McKee, who was also in the Breadbasket family, he was one of those guys just to hook stuff up, you know, and he created this company called GNP, Gross National Product.
Okay.
He hooked us up with the Emotions, particularly Wanda Hutchinson. And through that union, we would go over her house and rehearse all the time. Through all of this, we rehearsed diligently. All the time. So we would go to her house and rehearse. And through her and through Dwight, we met Nadine McKinner, who was the lyricist for This Christmas, Donny Hathaway.
Okay.
And she took a liking to us. And then we met Leroy Hudson. I think Wanda brought Leroy Hudson in. And he was interested in the group. And he produced the record.
Okay, so did you sign a record deal with? Did you have a manager?
We signed. Yes, Dwight McKee was our manager at the time, and he was also president of GNP. And it was a couple of other acts: Joyce Faison, Peaches. She was part of that. A couple of people and one other group, but there was a mixed group, and then it was us.
You remember the other group? Okay.
I don't remember their name.
And Leroy had been working at Curtom before,
yeah,
right?
And that's where we did the recording at Curtom.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And whose idea was it to record a cover of Want to Be Where You Are?
Nadine McKinner suggested doing copy stuff, you know, and Leroy Hudson, Wanda, they thought it would be a good idea to cover a hit.
Yeah, it was similar to Sweet Music, too, where mm-hmm. you took a record and made it like a disco version
mm-hmm.
of it.
Right.
So it was their idea that, I guess, I don't know, was it like that they thought it'd be recognizable, plus it'd be
right.
disco, so...
Right. And just with the arrangement and everything, they thought it would really, really go.
So, and do you know how you got to Buddha Records?
Well, Dwight McKee hooked that up, but as far as the details, no, I couldn't tell you. Because at that time, I was very young, naive, and I was just into being a star. So the business part of it now is a whole nother different story. Back then, the business part of it, I didn't get in all that. I just wanted to get a record deal and do shows and travel and, you know.
So you cut, did the record get play?
It did. It got, it made, I thought it was Billboard, it was Cashbox. Where it hit on the cash box.
So it hit nationally?
It did. It got particularly a lot of play in the South.
So did it get play in Chicago?
If it did, it was very, very limited. But Buddha, they really liked us, and they gave us carte blanche when any of the artists would come in town.
What do you mean? Like
you know, like say, I think Michael Henderson was on the label at the time, and was Ashford Simpson on that label one time? Okay, well, I know Michael Henderson was. And when an artist would come in town, they would invite us to come down, they would send limos for us, you know,
okay.
just treat us like stars.
So,
and I was digging it.
do you know why it didn't get played in Chicago? Just
no,
didn't hit here?
I couldn't tell you.
So then, did you record more material or just?
We did. Mm-hmm.
So first,
never was released.
There was a B side to the record. What was mm-hmm. the B side called?
Je vous aime beaucoup.
Which means
I love you in French.
So I've never even heard the song because it usually comes as a promo with the same song on both sides.
Yeah.
What was the other song? Was it in French?
No, it wasn't in French. Just the hook line, and it was a Donny Hathaway tune. It was a remake again. You know,
okay.
Copy.
Mm-hmm. And so pretty much the side that got play was the Want to Be Where You
yes.
Are.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And did you travel to the South since it got played there before?
No, we didn't. Mm-mm, because right when the song was beginning to hit, the other young lady was in the group, Jackie McCullough, she left the group.
Okay.
So we kind of had to regroup.
So
and
then
Hank Hicks left the group, too.
And you said that the group had originally just kind of formed to record, like you were practicing, but you weren't doing shows. Did you mm-hmm. start doing shows?
Yeah, we did. We did some shows. Uh-huh, yes, we did.
In Chicago, mainly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mainly in Chicago. We didn't do too much. We didn't do too much traveling, just in Chicago.
And you said you recorded more material. Was it at the same session?
I don't remember if it was at the same session. We went in several times because Leroy had a couple of tunes we recorded. And then we also did a recording with Marvin Yancey that Ricky Linton wrote. We did that at Paul Serrano. That was never released either.
So how much unreleased stuff did you record?
Let me think. I would say about, two that I can think of right at the top of my head with Leroy, one with Marvin Yancey. So I would say maybe four or five tunes, including this one that you just played.
So why didn't Buddha release more material on you?
Probably because, like I said, two of the two members left. We had to regroup.
Okay.
When Jackie McCullough left, Sheila Pearson came in. And when Hank left, Andre Linton, Ricky Linton's brother, came in. And we were supposed to be doing a major tour, which we were rehearsing for. They brought in a choreographer and everything like that. But I really couldn't tell you what happened with that Buddha thing.
So you didn't do the tour?
No, we never did do the tour because Ricky Linton was always interested, even with the group, he was always interested in doing a solo project. And he decided at some point to leave the group as well.
So he left to be a solo artist?
Mm-hmm.
And then how long did the group stay together after that?
Not long at all, not even a year.
So what year was that the group broke up, like 77?
Yeah, I would say about 77, yeah.
And then did you join Sweet Music right after that?
Mm-hmm. I sure did, because I was looking for another group. I was digging the group thing.
Okay.
But I had never sung with females, and I was very hesitant, but Regina talked me into it. Because I'm like, women again after the Belgian Nets. I'm like, oh, no.
How did you know Regina?
How did we meet? Didn't we meet through the Linda Clifford thing?
We met through the Linda Clifford thing, yeah.
Because I was singing, me and Ellen Samuels both were singing background with Linda Clifford. We did her major tour, and that's how we met, because she came to do the gig after we left.
Yeah, Linda was really trying to, I think, have two sets of background vocals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what happened was we ended up meeting each other, and then I don't know who... We never toured with her. We did rehearse with her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So were you on record with Linda, or you just...
Just did tours.
Okay.
Now, Diane Madison, I knew Diane Madison because when Jackie McCullough left the group, Diane Madison came to audition.
Okay.
I was for her, and Ricky Linton liked her too, but the other guys who were like more, you know, John Harper particularly, he wanted Sheila Pearson.
Okay.
You know, but I really wanted Diane Madison. I thought she would be perfect.
You know. Did you know Byron at that time?
No.
Mm-mm. No. So, because you were in a group originally called, how did you get started?
Oh, I started back in the 70s, early 70s, with a group called the Celestials. You know, we were right in high school.
Are you from the South Side also?
Yeah, also from the South Side, far south.
Mm-hmm. What area?
100 in Wallace, 110th and Union.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what school were you in when you the Celestials were together?
I was going to Harlem.
Okay.
Yeah, most of the people that was in the Celestials were Harlem.
What year was that?
That was 1969-70, and we were together as a group.
So did you know like the five stair steps or like because they were
I knew the sequence because one of the girls, Dottie, was in my English class.
Okay.
You know, and I knew of the specials. Those were the big groups around that time. You know, because I was there in 69.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then and you were in a group called this. In fact, someone just gave me a Harlan High School yearbook. Maybe your group is it, because it had some unidentified groups in it. That maybe your group's one of the groups.
Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to perform there.
Okay.
We wanted to, you know, but it just never happened.
So you never recorded at the Celestials?
No, we never recorded. Well, we recorded somewhere, it was never released.
Okay.
We did a song called Just As Long As We're Together. You know, Terry Batchman, who played on Jerry Butler's... Yeah, Ain't Understanding Mellow and Leaving Me.
Okay.
You know, yeah. He wrote that song with Pam Batchman singing and lead.
And what, how did you get singing with a group originally? Like, how did you get into that?
With my sisters, you know, we would give little parties and they would have parties, family parties, and we would sing a lot of the Motown stuff, you know.
Okay.
Me and my sisters.
And it must have been...
We even had a group back then in the early... late 60s called the Vandals, And my sister Karen was singing lead, The Touch of You. That was our two. It was four males and one female.
Okay, which was like what Brendan and the Tabulation
sound was.
So then, and so you had a group called the Celestials at Harlan High School.
At Harlan High School. Our biggest break was in 1972. We were on the show with The Brighter Side of Darkness trying to get that record deal.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
And you said you actually recorded, but it wasn't released?
Nothing was released.
Do you know what happened to those recordings? Does anyone have them?
Oh, man. Maybe Tashi Pam Batchman might have them in California.
Okay.
Maybe, yeah.
So then what happened after that?
After that, I started working with a young lady named Gail Pierce, who was a part of the group at that time. And we started a group called Heat with Billy Hartfield. We called him Chop Chop.
Okay.
He wrote Don't You Ever Walk Away for the Lintons.
Okay.
You know, so all that just kind of hooked up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Heat, did you ever record?
We recorded a couple of things. I found a tape of some unreleased stuff recently.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was Heat, did you perform in clubs also?
Yeah, we did a lot of clubs around the city.
And so you formed around 72, something like that?
72, 73, you know.
And how long was Heat together?
We were together, well, because out of Heat, it became Brandy.
Okay.
You know, because we lost a couple of members. Gail left and Billy Hartfield left. It was Anthony Dockery and a young lady named Julie Dominguez. So around the time Brandy formed, that was like in 75, we had Marshall Titus, a guy named Timothy Brown, Anthony Dockery, Julie Dominguez, and Marshall Titus, myself.
And were you also doing music full-time?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah.
So Brandy was also performing at the same kind of clubs that we talked about already?
Yeah.
And so first of all, you were called Heat, and some of the members changed. You became Brandy.
We became Brandy.
How long was Brandy together?
Brandy stayed together up until 79.
Okay.
And, that's when On Stage started.
So did Brandy ever record anything?
Yeah, we recorded a couple of things too that unfortunately wasn't released.
Okay. So you have a lot of unreleased material with all the groups you've been in.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did On Stage form?
On Stage, they were doing some backup work for us, you know, under Brandy, you know, and they had already had the group together. He was looking for a male singer to do some leads. And I said, hey, I joined it because my group was getting ready to fold. And
so they were a band?
Yeah, we were a self-contained band. Everybody did vocals, lead vocals, as well as background vocals, too.
And they brought you in as a lead vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know how long they were together before you joined?
I think maybe a year or so they might have been together.
Okay.
You know, but they were also the backup band for the Staple Singers and Gene Chandler. You know.
So they toured with him?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to start touring with them, too?
Unfortunately, no. I didn't get a chance to tour with them, no.
So,
Actually, they just needed the core band.
So you said you joined around 79?
Mm-hmm.
And I think your first record came out, was it Hooked on Your Love?
Hooked on Your Love and Who You Really Are was the first two singles.
And that came out, was it 83?
83, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So were you with On Stage for about 4 years before?
Before we had a real release, yeah. We recorded some stuff, you know, but that was the actual first release as a unit.
And so were you performing with them regularly at clubs and stuff?
Yeah. We did a lot of high school proms and different things like that. Corporate work, you know, that's what we were doing at that time.
And were you also working with other groups or just mainly On Stage at that time?
Yeah, because me and I, we were working together, and Regina, we were working together with the Kinjanius. Mm-hmm. We was part of that unit.
Okay.
You know, we recorded some stuff. Nothing was ever released with that either. But
so that was in the late 70s?
Yeah. Well, we had a ball, though. We used to play at a club called Dean Bats.
Mr. T was the...
Mr. T was the bodyguard.
The bouncer,
yeah.
He wasn't even MC. He was just the bodyguard.
Yeah, he was just the bodyguard.
That's funny. So, and was it like jazz you did with Ken Chaney?
Yeah, we did jazz with him, yeah.
Okay.
Excellent keyboard player, man. Great.
So then, how did you end up? So you said you recorded some stuff with On Stage that wasn't released. How did you end up actually releasing material?
Well, the two guys, which I cannot remember their name, Carl Bertillo is our manager, and he talked with these two guys with SOC Records.
Okay.
And they was really interested. They came out to one of the shows. They said, we got to release some stuff on you guys. He said, have you recorded some stuff? I said, yeah. You know, we were recording out of Alpha Studios out in Lombard. You know, we did our stuff out there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we recorded out there, and they liked the record, and that was the first release.
So this came out in 83. This is called Hooked on Your Love.
Hooked on Your Love.
Let me play the record, and we can talk some more.
Okay.
So this is On Stage with Hooked on Your Love.
Okay, that was just On Stage with Hooked on Your Love. That came out in 1983. And that was the first record, I think, released that Byron Woods sang on. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Mike sang on the other song, Mike Logan, Who You Really Are.
So what was the lineup of the group at that point?
Ooh, it was quite a few people. It was Larry Campbell played bass and lead vocals, background vocals. Michael Logan played keyboards, lead vocals, background vocals. Marcia Miller, she was our lead vocalist and songwriter. Willie Simmons played guitar. Thurman Morgan played guitar. Chipito Hardy played percussion. And we had Dana Goodman on drums. So it was about eight of us, I think.
So you sang lead and the band members sang backup?
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much it was the three of us, Larry and Mike, you know. And Marcia would do a lot of stuff with us, too, Marcia Miller.
And one thing I had forgotten to ask you is, you said that some of your previous groups had actually recorded, but it was never released.
Yeah, we were working with Jim Porter, you know, at the time back in the 70s. We recorded a few things with him, you know. One, we were working with Sherman Nesberry. We did a song called Come Stay With Me A While, and Vitamin U or Vitamin B, something like that. Vitamin B, I think it was, because we was always weird about the tune, you know, but that was with the original Heat Brandy.
So Heat or Brandy sang back up behind Sherman Nesberry?
We sang back row. Mm-hmm.
And did Jim Porter ever record anything solo on you?
Yeah, he did a couple of things. We had a Gail Pierce had left the group, and we got a young lady named Juanita Ashmore, and we did a song called Waiting for the Letter, Mr. Postman, Waiting for the Letter. Very nice ballad, you know, but unfortunately didn't get released.
Okay.
And she didn't stay too long either, so.
And then, so what year did you record that?
That was in 76.
And you were
75, 76, yeah.
And then with On Stage, you said you recorded some stuff too initially before SOC Records. Were you working with somebody, or you just recorded on yourself?
No, we were just recording, you know, just trying to let people hear what we were doing, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you finally had a record released in 83, and you were telling me off the mic that you actually tried to take it to Jim Porter also.
Yeah, we took some of the recordings to Jim Porter, you know, but he had quite a few people signed to that label.
Had a wrecked record at that time.
Yeah, yeah, and SOC was really pushing to release our record.
So you had actually recorded it yourselves and were just shopping it around to labels?
Yeah.
So SOC didn't have much to do with it except putting it out.
Right. Pretty much they just did a pressing and distribution with it.
And they didn't distribute it well, did they?
No. That record shot out and then you didn't hear no more about it. That was it.
So then I have another record that you did. I guess you did it next. Called She's a Lady of the Night, and it came out on Jesse Records.
Yeah, we was with Jesse Saunders, the dance guy.
Okay.
Yeah, we were signing his label, and we did it for the one shoot with the record, She's a Lady of the Night.
Okay. And did it get pressed on a 12-inch also? I have it on a 45.
Yeah, it did get pressed on 12-inch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just cause, but it was too slow to be like a house record, really.
No, that was, he wanted to try something different, you know, and he really liked the record at the time, you know, so he decided, let's go with it.
And did it get any play?
We got a lot of play in Detroit, Chicago, Milwaukee, you know, the Midwest, you know, it got a lot of play.
Okay, and then did he release any more material off on you?
No. Out of that, we just kind of fell through. We had another record that was scheduled for release, but it just didn't happen. A song called You Gotta Go. You know, we did that in 84. You know, Mike Logan wrote the song. It was really nice, but it just didn't happen.
Okay, so were the only two records you released the SOC record and then Lady of the Night?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And did you tour as On Stage also?
Yeah, we did. You know, pretty much in the Midwest, you know, Milwaukee area, you know, Indiana, you know, Illinois State, you know, in the state of Illinois. So, yeah.
And did you also do, like, mayor functions, like similar types of things?
Yeah, we did. We did a big fundraiser for Harold Washington, Mayor Harold Washington at the time.
Okay.
He was going for it, so, yeah.
You mean before he was elected? Or?
Before he was elected.
Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Soon to be mayor.
Yeah, soon to be mayor at that time, yeah, yeah.
So how long did you stay with On Stage?
On Stage was together that I was a part of from 79 up until about 89.
Okay, so you were together for a long time.
Yeah, about 10 years.
Okay, so during that time, I guess we'll get back to the story of the two ladies who are in the studio now. So you had just joined Sweet Music, May, and you were singing together at Sweet Music?
Yeah.
How long did you stay together?
How long were we together? Maybe
82? Maybe,
because
while we were... While we were at Sweet Music, we were also part of a group called Panama.
Right.
Yeah.
And Diane and Deborah and I were singing background behind Walter Jackson.
When you mean when he was touring?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's around the same time that Ellen and I were singing background with Linda Clifford.
Right, because we play places that don't exist anymore. Mill Run, Rat Souls.
The Ivanhoe.
Yeah.
We did Ivanhoe. And also, I did and the other girl that had joined Reality after the first girl left, we did Leroy Hudson's tour.
So he was a solo artist and you were singing
background? He was a solo artist and we were singing background with him as well.
So,
and we traveled around the states.
So you were working a lot just doing background vocals for different artists.
Uh-huh.
But the Panama piece
was
a very, very powerful group.
Very.
We had cult following. We were like...
Yeah.
We played all of the North Side clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Gaspar's, the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulls was like our home.
Mm-hmm.
We played... Orphans.
Redford's.
This place on Southport.
We did Man Country with them, too.
Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm. And this place on Southport. What was it?
That was Gaspar's, I think, wasn't it?
I don't know.
So when did Panama form?
Panama, I think, formed in 70...
Probably 79?
Yeah.
I was 78. Yeah, because I was with Sherry Scott.
Okay, yeah, because Sherry Scott was there. Because it was me and Ellen and Sherry Scott and Shay first.
Before Byron?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was the first male vocal there besides Penny.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So then Byron came.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sherry left. And then Ellen came.
Ellen came.
And then Byron left.
Right. Byron left. And then Ellen pulled me in.
Okay. And then Diane and I came.
Mm-hmm.
And Shay was always there.
Right. She was always there.
Shay Jones.
Mm-hmm. And at one point, it was Shay Jones, Sean Christopher, May Cohen, Ellen Samuels, Diane Madison, and Regina Walton.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And we did a lot of Sergio Mendez type stuff.
Right.
You know, it was...
It was Panama was like Latin?
Yeah, that kind of music. And a lot of his own originals as well. Israel Torres.
Ooh.
Beautiful music.
He was an awesome, awesome writer, and
he
surrounded himself with fire musicians:
mm-hmm.
Chuck Luck, Elmer Brown,
Keith Henderson,
Dede Sampaio.
Yeah.
Oh man!
And it was like because it was such a mixed bag of artists. Wherever we went, there was standing room only.
Mm-hmm. Every time,
no matter what. And we would always open with this...
The real thing.
The real thing. God, Sergio Mendez.
And it was like... Real thing.
It was like an electricity. We did a live album at...
Park West.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, so there was an album released on
there? Was it released?
It wasn't released, but it was recorded.
It was recorded for sure.
Yeah, we don't think it ever got released.
So Panama, it was more like... So, and what types of... You already mentioned doing the Park West, but it was more like kind of a Latin, kind of sophisticated sound.
It was very sophisticated, but it was raw.
Mm-hmm.
It was raw. Though it was a polished look, the sound was raw. Remember how LaBelle used to sound back in the 70s? Where even when they were recorded, you could still hear the rawness.
They were kind of funky.
It was funky, but it was like we were singing with everything we
had. That's right. We would stand on the tables and everything.
Yes, we would.
Mm-hmm.
And where Sweet Music would polish.
Very polished.
We would polish and shine it up and make sure that it was mixed Mm-hmm. We were mixed. Mm-hmm. We would mix our vocals right. in our heads and in rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Panama, you went for the jugular vein.
It was on.
Took no prisoners, man.
So both groups existed at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
It was just kind of whatever work came up, you would either do stuff with Sweet Music or with Panama?
Yeah, but what began to happen was the commitment became, we all began to commit more to Panama.
Because the feel was just so great.
Yeah.
The overall energy was just so great.
And it was something about walking on stage with these ladies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would look at each other and it would be like,
man,
unbelievable.
And we all became best friends.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. So what years were Panama together?
77, 78, 79, 80, 81,
82, 83. Yeah. I would say 83. Mm-hmm. 83.
And it was mainly a group led by that one guy.
Israel Torres, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how did you know him?
I can't even remember how I got to Panama.
Well, I got there through Ellen. Ellen pulled you in.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you pulled Diane in.
Okay.
I remember that. Because yeah. I'm the only member of Panama to sing with every singer that came through Panama. Because
mm-hmm.
there were so many great singers that came through Panama. Joni Pilato came through. Nanette Frank came through.
Yep.
It was just so many great singers. But
Suzanne
mm-hmm. Palmer.
Yeah,
Miriam Cancel.
Yeah,
Miriam mm-hmm. Cancel. So many great singers came yeah. through there.
But still, the core
yeah.
was the core. Ellen, Diane, May, Sean, Shay, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
That became
right.
the core.
That was the core.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and what types of venues did you do?
Oh, we did that North Side circuit.
Oh yeah.
And we did it hard. Again, mm-hmm. the Bulls, Gaspars, Orphans,
mm-hmm. Redford.
Redford's.
Park West when we did the recording. We did the Park West more than one time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Was it just you on the show at the Park West?
Yeah, it was us in concert, and it was a packed house. Everywhere we went, it was a packed house.
So you had like a following in Chicago?
Yeah.
Mega.
Yeah.
Did you ever travel outside Chicago?
Nope.
No, we never did.
And Byron, were you in Panama for a second too?
Yeah.
How did you join the group?
We did the, I think Sherry Scott turned me on to that.
What year did you join?
I joined them in 78. I started with them, and then I did Chicago Fest. We did something there. I think it was 81, I think was it.
So was that the first time you worked with May and Regina?
No,
because by then we had done Ken Chaney.
Okay, I forgot about that. So did they bring you in through that? They knew you through the Ken Chaney?
He came in by another.
I came in from Sherry Scott.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
From the fire.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She was working with him at the time, and mm-hmm. she asked me to come in and do some stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
So it sounds like the way the scene was at the time, everybody was working in a lot of different groups.
Yeah.
And each group had a different style and performed at different types of clubs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I guess. You all continued to do music through the 80s, like you were when on stage.
Yeah.
And what? So how long was Panama together?
I think until about maybe 83.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what did you do after that?
I think, when did Vocal Point?
About 85.
About 85.
Because mm-hmm. I got married, much mm-hmm. to my chagrin.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. had my son, who's now 23. My oldest girl is... She'll be 40 on her birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, so I got married and had children.
And I had a son also around the time, 82. So I kind of slowed down for a little while, you know, because I was a single parent.
Okay.
You know. Mm-hmm.
So, Regina, what was the last time that you sang?
Actually, I do things with poets.
Okay.
So maybe in February... I was with a gospel community choir for a while called Visions.
Okay.
A choral ministry. Woo, that was a fun mm-hmm. thing.
So, but in the 80s, did you stop singing for a while?
No, because I was married to a musician who had a big band. And so I sang up until 3 days before I had my son.
Okay, what was the name of his band?
Vincent Carter's Big Band. I don't know.
So you just sang with his shows?
Mm-hmm.
And you stopped singing for a while after that?
I did. I went back to school. And then 3 years after I had my son, I had my youngest daughter, who'll be 20, on her birthday. And then I went back to school, got some degrees, and now I'm a professor for City College.
Oh, okay. Congratulations.
But I still sing. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What do you teach at?
I teach speech and theater.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What schools do you teach at all?
I teach at Malcolm X College, one of the City Colleges of Chicago.
So the last group you sang with?
The last group I sang with was First Love.
Mm. Well, how did you get involved with them?
I don't know.
Okay.
Bernie, the manager was Bernie.
And it was already after they had recorded, so you're not... But in the 80s, did you stop singing for a while?
No, because I was married to a musician who had a big band. And so I sang up until 3 days before I had my son.
After that?
I think... Well, when did Vocal Point...
About 85.
Because I got married, much to my chagrin.
That's right.
And had my son, who's now 23. My oldest girl is, she'll be 40 on her birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, so I got married and had children. And
I had a son also around that time, 82. So I kind of slowed down for a little while, you know, because I was a single parent.
Okay.
You know. Mm-hmm.
So, Regina, what was the last time that you sang?
Actually, I do things with poets.
Okay.
So, maybe in February, I was with a gospel community choir for a while called Visions.
Okay.
A choral ministry. Ooh, that was a fun thing.
So, but in the 80s, did you stop singing for a while?
No, because I was married to a musician who had a big band. And so I sang up until 3 days before I had my son.
Okay, what was the name of his band?
Vincent Carter's Big Band. I don't know.
So you just sang with his shows, mm-hmm. and you stopped singing for a while after that?
I did. I went back to school, and then 3 years after I had my son, I had my youngest daughter, who'll be 20, on her birthday. And then I went back to school, got some degrees, and now I'm a professor for City College.
Okay, congratulations.
But I still sing. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What do you teach at?
I teach speech and theater.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What schools do you teach at all?
I teach at Malcolm X College, one of the City Colleges of Chicago.
So the last group you sang with?
The last group I sang with was First Love.
Mm. Well, how did you get involved with them?
I don't know.
Okay.
Bernie, the manager was Bernie.
It was already after they had recorded, so you're not on any of the recordings.
No.
Okay. I know they went through like a lot of lineup changes too.
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm.
So, but why did Panama break up?
Panama really didn't break up. Israel got sick.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. And May, what did you do in the 80s?
I was singing the whole time. I've never stopped singing. Matter of fact, my last singing job was just last night. I'm still singing. I did a lot of background work. You know, we were still doing Ken Chaney. And then, you know, we formed Vocal Point, but then Byron had on stage, so he was gone for a while, so it was just three in Vocal Point. It was Diane Madison, Ryan Henley, and myself, and later Byron came back.
So what was Vocal Point? When did Vocal Point form?
In 85.
Mm-hmm.
So you originally formed it?
Yeah, the four of us. Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, we had pulled Ron Henley in, and he hadn't sung a note with us, and we did a photo shoot.
Yeah, okay. We had photos before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what type of sound did Vocal Point have?
Wow.
What kind of sound?
Real distinctive vibe, jazz vocals, that's what we would do.
Yeah.
You know,
like a Manhattan Transfer. Lambert, Hendrix & Ross,
yeah,
trying to get back to that.
Yeah,
Fifth Dimension.
Along those lines, yeah. Creator Source.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you left the group for a while?
Yeah, because on stage we still had product that was out. We signed with Carl Batiste, had a label called Omnibus Records.
Okay.
Yeah, we signed with them. We released a couple of singles.
Oh, you did release more material?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so then Vocal Point stayed on without you for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did a lot of shows too. A lot of shows like at the Cotton Club, mm-hmm. and what was that place downtown? The Raccoon Club.
Raccoon Club.
Mm-hmm. That was a mainstay for us. We did a lot of local stuff, you know.
And then is Vocal Point still together?
Yes, mm-hmm. we are.
Mm-hmm. So you've been together for so off and on.
About 23 years now.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you
yeah.
believe it, Dean?
Wow.
23 mm-hmm. years now. Mm-hmm.
So what types of things do you do now?
We're still recording. We're working on putting together a full CD. We had a Christmas CD out a few years back, so we're working on a full CD, full jazz CD.
Mm-hmm. And you have like a modern jazz harmony type
mm-hmm.
of sound?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the CD is going to sound like, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's May and myself mm-hmm. and Dan Porter and Diane Madison.
Okay.
mm-hmm. We're all in the vine.
Right. Like the vocal tree.
Yeah.
So people should look out for that. Is that you releasing it yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
More than likely, yeah, we got to release it on VP Records.
Okay.
VP Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess the story of a lot of your careers, especially throughout the 80s and 90s, is just working with a lot of different groups and
doing backup work. You know, mm-hmm. May and Diane sang backup with Aretha Franklin.
We did Aretha Franklin.
Mickey Howard.
We did Mickey Howard. Cousin Nanette Frank. Diane Madison and myself, because Nanette came in Panama toward the end, and we kind of formed a union, and we did background with Mickey Howard, you know, and then Diane and I went on to do background with Aretha Franklin. Sometimes Diane and myself, we work with Phil Perry.
Okay.
You know, so
unit, we work with Phil Perry.
Yeah, I mean, right. That's right. And then we did Vesta Williams.
We did Vesta.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we do.
So just live, you're talking about a live show.
Yeah, live shows.
So how do you get involved with all these people? Is it just word of mouth, or do you have like a booking agent?
Word of mouth. Okay. The musicians, mm-hmm. like usually when people come in town, the musicians all know, you know, they call Byron or they'll call me because they know that we all are good support singers, you know, background singers. So, you know, they'll call us and, you know.
Is there a musician?
Mm-hmm.
Are there a lot of people doing background work, or is it a pretty small circle of people that you're involved with that do background work?
Well, in our core group, it's just, you know, just like Nanette Frank, myself, mm-hmm. Diane Madison, Byron, Dan. You know.
Yeah.
That's about it, huh?
In that particular core. But I don't. And then from the era. You still have Joan Colosso, you've got Sue Conway.
That's right.
You've got
Yvonne Gaye. She does a lot of background stuff.
First Love.
Yeah, she was with First Love, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I replaced Yvonne, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
okay. I didn't know Yvonne was
mm-hmm.
a First Love.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, you know, the old heads still do it.
Right.
I don't know what these young people are doing. I don't know. I just recently, and I'm dating myself, found out that we don't use 2-inch tape anymore. And so it's like, okay. May we say hello to somebody?
Sure.
Hey, Kenny.
What's happening, Kenny?
Hey, Kenny.
Yeah.
Kenny goes back with me to the That's Life days.
Okay.
Oh, man.
And we've done background on a lot of his stuff. Yeah, that's a mm-hmm. singing brother. Hey,
baby. Yeah, he was producing Gloria Bannister, but it was some other name. She was real popular in France or over in Europe somewhere, and he was producing her something, and we would do a background. Yeah. So that's how I met Kenny. Great guy.
Then Diane mm-hmm. and I did a stint with Gene Record when he went solo.
Okay.
With the Welcome to My Fantasy album.
So you're on the LP.
Yeah, we're on that. And we're on Mellow Mellow Right On too.
Okay.
The real time.
That's cool. Who are the girls on Mellow Mellow Right On?
Diane Madison, myself, and this girl named That's really weird. I can see her face, but I can't remember her name.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, it was three of them.
And have any of you sung backup on any other records that were released?
What was the name of that group? I can't remember the name of that group. It was a girl singer. I can't remember, but Diane and I and Teresa did the background on their hit. They had a hit.
Smoke City. Dream About You.
We're on the background for that.
Mm-hmm.
And
And
the sax player. I can't remember his name either. He had a hit too. Diane, myself, and Teresa's on that as well.
Did they ever release Ed Green's CD?
I don't think it was ever released, but that was a great CD.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we did Corky McClurkin.
Corky McClurkin. Yeah, we worked mm-hmm. with him.
And that was released.
Yeah, that was released.
So, and how did you get with Aretha Franklin?
Billy Always. We used to, Diane and I used to sing background with Billy Always. He had a record out on Epic. He was with the Epic label, and he was doing some shows. And he met us. He used to come and see Panama.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he found out about us.
What years were you with Aretha?
We started with Aretha in 98. I think it was
97 or 98,
and our last job with her was 2004.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looks like we're out of time, and the next DJ is itching to get on the air. So first of all, thanks so much for telling your story.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear about sort of how musicians worked in Chicago in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Seems like you had to be a member of a lot of different groups and do lots of different types of clubs.
It was family.
Yeah, we were really good.
And do you have any last words for the listening audience?
Keep hanging in there.
Okay.
For the new artists, keep hanging in there.
If somebody stumbles across that, I Get Lifted 12-inch, would you give Bob a call? Because I can't find anything anywhere.
Okay, I'll try to get you a recording of that, too.
Yeah, and if anybody has a side A, B to the reality, hey, the Buddha. Hey, give us a shout-out.
Okay, so thanks again, and the next DJ is coming on now. And while he's coming on, this is She's a Lady of the Night by Onstage.